Oh, hell, they're going to safety, man.
Oh, y'all get your stuff on. Get everything on, man.
They're going to safety, man. I'll be in the back.
Here comes the clipboard, man.
I wonder if he brought something to eat.
Hello, and welcome to Safety Man Coming, the podcast about the people behind the cones on the roadway. This episode, our guest is Michelle Coletta. Michelle spent most of her career in the HR side of business. The majority of that was in highway construction. Just like safety, HR sees the good, the bad, and the ugly of any business. Let's listen as she tells us her experiences, as well as ways to hire good people and keep good people. Okay, so looking at what I have on my sheet here, this is Michael Coletta. Is that right?
Michelle Coletta.
That can't be right. There are no women in construction. How did that work?
Well, I weaseled my way in. What can I say?
So, Michelle Coletta.
I warmed down.
No joke. First of all, thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. So, the first thing I want to know is just who you are and just kind of what you did or done in the construction industry.
So, yes, I'm Michelle Coletta, and I have been in human resources, which is the capacity I worked in road construction, for almost 25 years. So, I've seen a lot and done a lot. I worked in a generalist capacity, so I didn't specialize in like benefits or comp or any of those kinds of things. I really touched everything human resources.
Right.
And, I've been in it, like I said, for about 25 years, and it's been an interesting ride.
It is that. So, how did you get into HR, but also how, once you got into that, how did you get into the construction side?
Yeah. So I think when I got into human resources, it wasn't as much of a thing as it is now. Mm-hmm. And certainly employment law, as it's evolved, HR has become even more critical.
Right.
In all kinds of companies, but I sort of stumbled into it like most people did back then. I don't remember anybody ever saying, I want to be an HR manager when I grow up. But I had worked. I mean, I think if you're in any kind of administrative role, you're doing something human resources.
Right.
Whether it just be listening to people vent, trying to give some guidance on that. But I had worked at an accounting firm and I left there for some personal reasons. And when I decided to get back into the workforce, I actually started with, which was owned then by Chemical, which was a chemical company.
Right.
And I started there. I had signed up with the temp agency, actually. So when people boo-boo temp agencies, they really can be good things, depending on
worked in your case.
Yeah, it worked great. I had a great career. But I started as a temp working for in their HR department on a project, a 2-year project.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the project, I was responsible then for staffing a financial shared service center. And so recruiting and hiring and onboarding 150 hourly and salary positions. So that was kind of the project that I was assigned to supporting the HR group. And I learned a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was a great way on that project because we were doing so much. It was a great way to learn a whole lot about human resources hands-on.
Right.
Staffing the financial shared service center is how it started. And then at the end of the project, they were looking to place people who I guess they thought had potential. And I guess somebody thought I had some potential.
Right.
So I interviewed for an HR manager position with our Memphis division. Okay. And ended up relocating to Memphis.
Okay. So that was, I guess once you did that and made the move to Memphis, that's probably where you got a little bit more hands-on as far as the construction side went.
Oh, yeah.
And hands-on in general with the things that you dealt with, I'm sure. I'm sure you saw a pretty good change as far as what you were dealing with once you got there. So as you made that transition, did you feel like what you knew about HR at that point, and then once you made that transition to more or less a local company like that, did you feel like there were new things you had to learn, things you figured out you didn't know, that kind of stuff?
Definitely. I used to kind of joke that I never thought of myself as naive until I started working in road construction at the field level, and I found out just how naive I was.
Yep.
But yeah, definitely. I mean, when you come from a corporate setting, I'm not the most politically correct person on the planet, so that never was my jam.
Yeah.
But when you come from a corporate structure to the field level where the work really gets done, hands-on mm-hmm. work really gets done. It's just a totally different world.
Yep.
You know, I wasn't a textbook HR person to begin with, and I probably got even less so when I really got in the field. They didn't really have in Memphis an HR structure. Mm-hmm. You know, HR was just evolving in the road construction industry. So it was, again, almost like a startup situation. And right. I had a ton of resistance, as you can imagine.
I bet, yeah.
I was female, I was from corporate, and I was human resources. Yeah, it's a miracle they let me stay beyond the first
day. Yeah, you had three strikes. Yeah, yes. It's a miracle you made it. Yeah, yeah. No joke. I didn't experience it quite like that, but I like you, I backed into it on the safety side. Mm-hmm. And so I experienced a lot of that, too, like, you back into it, you learn parts of it as you go and things right. like that, and you get better and better. And then just by the time you think you've got it figured out, something changes and you go, I still don't know anything.
Right, right.
You know, so you just, it develops into that you're always learning.
Yeah. I had come from a straight non-union environment all my career. And a few years back, I ended up in a union environment, steelworkers mm-hmm. for 2 years, and I learned so much. And yep. the one thing I learned was more patience, which I'm not great at, but you got to have it when you're working in the union environment, yep. especially. But you do, when you get in the real world, especially in what I call these rough and tumble industries, mm-hmm. you do have to learn as you go. That's the thing about HR. No two situations are exactly the same.
Yep.
And you really do, you can have all the laws and all the work rules you want to have, but you really do kind of have to analyze each situation on a case-by-case basis and determine what the right action is.
You do. That has been fascinating to me and on the safety side as well, is it's very much like that. Once you get some education, whatever that is, you know, formally,
right.
or whether it's just reading the book or whatever, you know, you've got some guardrails, you've got some guidelines more or less, but there's not a textbook way, this is the way we do it.
Right.
And It was even that way for me on the engineering side when I surveyed, right? We're supposed to build the road this way, but here's the situation we have.
Exactly.
How do we make it work? So it's been awesome to see and talk to people and see that mindset has to exist all the way through wherever in the business you are.
It absolutely does. And you know, and you're dealing, same with safety, but but it's a little different mm-hmm. in human resources. Yeah, you all've got ocean, but you're doing kind of the more operational stuff.
Yep.
Whereas in HR, we're trying to develop leaders and coach and counsel and do all that fun stuff. And you're in industries that, especially when I first joined road construction, pretty rough and tumble.
Yeah.
All my career really has been in rough and tumble. But, you know, back in I heard some crazy stories back in the day. They used to run around on the paving crew with no shoes and no shirt,
right.
you know, and a cooler of beer in the back of the truck.
Yep.
You know, yep. it really was, when you say no HR, there was no HR, yeah. not much safety either.
Yeah, it wasn't. I came into construction in general just on the tail end of that. I had like the first job I was ever on for a really small company. We had a contractor who had a cooler of beer in the back of the truck, and that lasted about 6 months. Yeah. And then I've never seen it again since then. Yeah. I was right on the tail end of that. So, you have seen a bunch. You've seen the industry itself develop. You've seen HR develop. Mm-hmm. You've been at a bunch of different things. So what to you is the biggest change in the industry and how HR affects it now versus when you started out?
I think just probably the acceptance, albeit sometimes forced, mm-hmm. that HR, when done right, and admittedly, we don't all do it right, yeah. but when done right, we really are a business partner. Mm-hmm. The cost impact to a company from not doing things well in the HR arena, that can be very costly,
right.
and they're not always obvious. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to pay a settlement to get out of a sticky situation. Somebody didn't do something right in your leadership group, and you have to manage through that. And oftentimes that ends in some kind of financial settlement, right or wrong. Yeah. I didn't always like it from an HR standpoint, but the kind of the strides that we've made in helping the business understand that, you know, when you're dealing with employment law, whether you agree or disagree, it's law and it can be costly. And I think more and more business leaders have started to discover that. There's still work to do. A lot of it's in the presentation, but you know, it may take a couple of costly settlements to kind of drive home the point. But
that always seems to be the case. You have the ones who, whatever it is, they're kind of early adopters because they can see, you know, and kind of see which way the winds are blowing. And hey, this is, we need to jump on this. It'll help us. It'll keep us from ending up in court, whatever that is. And then you have the ones that were like I was as a kid, like I had to mess up to understand what the issue was. And, you know, when you're a business like that, it gets really costly very quickly.
Well, and I get it. And especially in industries like the ones we worked in, it's the margin is so narrow. And, you know, the main goal of operations is to make money. Let's just be honest about that. We're all there to make money and get a paycheck. Right. We don't do it just for fun. It's not volunteer work.
Yep.
So I understand that. And I think when you're working with leaders who respect the HR function, like it's easier for them to understand that, you know, we're trying to do a job that can save us money, that can save us all kinds of headaches. Because, you know, I talked about settlements, but even just the time invested in investigations and things of that nature, there's an indirect cost impact to it, for sure. And people are getting, laws are getting more strict. There's more of them. The employees are getting more savvy around employment laws. When I first started, you know, definitely HR knew more about the law than employees.
Yeah.
It's not that way anymore.
Right.
You can't assume your employees don't know their right. They do.
The the other place I've seen that indirect cost, like you're talking about, one that has been relevant for me the last several years has been through retention. Like,
yes.
You know, we start doing the math on what it costs to advertise a position all the way through getting that person in and getting them trained up and on the job on the first or second day, like how much that cost. And if your turnover rate is 70% at an hourly position, like you've sent a bunch of money door.
That's right. Exactly right. And the hiring process is so important. And it's something that so many just don't have the patience for. You know, I've been in and counseled so many supervisors and managers on when you're interviewing people, they need to do more of the talking than you do.
Yeah.
You know, over the years, I've seen so many who really like to hear themselves talk. And I get you want to educate people about the business. A lot of them already have researched it when they come in the door for the interview. But generally in an interview, you want them to do most of the talking. I'm a believer in behavioral-based interview. Mm-hmm. I think past practice sort of dictates, past behavior dictates future behavior.
Right.
Generally speaking. And if you're doing all the talking, you're not hearing anything about how they handle situations.
Right. So I'm curious to get a little info from you, a little insight on that, because a couple of things. I've worked at places before where when somebody showed up their first day for new hire orientation, I would ask them, what are you going to be doing here? Oh, I don't know. Well, who are you going to work for? It's like, I've met him, but I can't remember the guy's name. And they were like, hey, do you know how much we're getting paid? I'm like, what? You know, so obviously we didn't do a great job during the onboarding process. But so if you've got somebody who's a, you know, a foreman, a supervisor, who is somebody who is a field type person and has a crew they manage, but they probably haven't had a lot of training on how to interview somebody. So like, right. What are a couple of like the key things, if I'm trying to hire a laborer, a shovel guy, a rake guy, an equipment operator, what are some very basic things that I should be looking for and asking people about?
So when it comes to those kind of entry level positions, I think in road construction materials, whatever the case may be, you know, it's getting tough. I'm not going to lie. It's getting tough in every industry at every level.
Yep.
But particularly with video games being around now for a couple decades anyway, you know, kids are not conditioned from a young age to be out in the elements, operating equipment. I mean, those skills, the trade skills are getting, you know, minimal.
Yeah.
It's very hard to find
people. We used to hire everybody off a farm, and
there's kids
off a farm, and there's not that many farm
there's
kids.
Not. And that those were great people for us.
Yep.
They were used to working outside. They were used to dirty. I mean, it's hot. You get in the southern states especially, you know, in Florida, even in Tennessee and Georgia, it can be extremely hot.
Yep.
Laying asphalt. And you know, farm kids are a lot. But I think you have to recognize first that the best you're probably ever going to get from someone is in the interview.
Right.
And if they don't interview well, And yeah. I don't mean like they say all the right things. I mean, if they don't seem to fit the culture,
right,
they're probably not going to be there for a long time.
Yeah.
So I think you have to look for cultural fit as much as anything and then train the skills. Mm-hmm. So you're looking for things like, you know, do they, you know, are your questions designed to determine if they're committed, you know, mm-hmm. if they're the kind of people that are going to be committed to something, how easily do they give up and quit, yeah. you know, those kinds of things, because it can be frustrating out there. And it's somewhat dangerous work. It can be yep. very dangerous.
It can be.
But I think you're looking for those kind of core values, I guess, if you will, for mm-hmm. lack of a better word, core competencies is what we say in the HR lingo. And then you train for the rest. You have to have supervisors. You have to have frontline leaders who are willing to train. They can't hire everyone expecting that they know how to do everything right off.
No.
So I think the more companies can develop, you know, training plans, however that needs to look, right. the better. The more you're going to lessen your turnover. You're always going to have quite a bit, just the nature of the beast.
Yep.
But I think for those entry-level positions, the more you can find the cultural fit and train the skill, mm-hmm. I think the better off you're going to be.
I have, I've worked at a couple of places where we had implemented some sort of new hire mentoring program to, mm-hmm. you know, instead of just that intro training, and then it's like, all right, off you go. You know, trying to, I don't know, more or less think of it as like it takes a village to raise a child type thing. Like exactly. we have to build this person up and it takes all of us to do it. And when we've done that in different places, it seems to work pretty well mm-hmm. as far as retention. And also they learn the job more quickly and they do a better job. And
yeah, I mean, I think the days are gone where you can just bring someone on and stick them out on a road crew and expect them to yeah. survive.
Good luck.
Yeah. yeah. I think companies have to be willing and leaders have to be willing to invest the time and the patience mm-hmm. Into the people to develop them. Otherwise, it's a struggle now. It's going to continue to be a struggle.
Right.
So you have to be willing to invest the time into building and developing people, building and developing leaders at every level, and not just go, 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 go.
Right.
Like we have done in days gone by.
Yeah.
As you and I will know.
Yeah. When you've got people lined up at the gate for a job, you can kind of run through them as you need to.
Yeah. I think another real challenge for our industry is, you know, with the recent developments in legalizing marijuana, mm-hmm. that I think that's added a whole new element to that hiring challenge. Is it's become so mainstream, it seems like, and in such a safety sensitive industry, it's challenging to manage all that.
It is. Every time in my circles that I have, every time that conversation comes up, everybody kind of understands it. Everybody understands probably where it's going and all this stuff. But the functional part of it, of exactly what you just said, how do you functionally get somebody, like, that's where the conversation yeah. stops. Nobody has a good idea.
No, I wish I had the answer for it. I don't.
Oh, no, I'd be a millionaire if I had it. Cause yeah.
I think there has to be some developments at some point in testing.
Yeah.
As you know, it can be in your system long after it's yep. done, but I certainly don't have the answer and hope I'm retired long before the answer comes along.
Right. Well, there you go. So one of the reasons that I started doing this podcast, my idea for the whole thing was, as you well know as well from your side, is you meet all these different people. They've yeah. all got these different backgrounds and stories, and so much happens over the course of your career in this. So I wanted to get a bunch of that stuff down, almost document in history to an extent, because these people are nameless and faceless. They're just hard hats and vests on the side of the yeah. road. So that was kind of my idea, wanting to start doing this. And so the very first one I did, you know, we had a lot of stories of various things that happen, funny situations and things like that. But so you and I have talked a little bit about it. Are there things that stick out to you, incidents that happened that were funny, memorable, things like that? What, when you think back over your career in it, what are some of the things that stick out that you're like, yep, only in road construction?
Yeah. There's a lot of them actually. Probably some not suitable for even radio.
But, I know. It's hard to catalog all of them.
Yes, it is. And you know, I've seen, let me say this first of all about road construction. I think it's not seen as a glamorous industry by any stretch of the imagination, but I can remember from early on in my career, especially at the field level, I was like, you know what? When I look around and I see these industries who are laying off left and right, who are downsizing, who are outsourcing, who are sending their work to Mexico, whatever the case may be, road construction's pretty sound.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do road construction remotely.
Nope, you cannot.
So when you think about security, job security, secure industries that are secure, if you're not, I'm not someone who likes to bounce around. I stay with employers for a good long time. And, you know, when I looked around, I was like, this is a pretty good industry. Yes, we had our peaks and valleys, mm-hmm. depending on funding, as we all know. But from a career standpoint, and it's definitely afforded me a pretty good lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So I want to really kind of say that about road construction. I don't want to miss this opportunity to kind of give it the recognition that it deserves and does not get.
Yeah.
You know, we all get frustrated sitting in traffic and you see road crews standing around appearing to not do anything while mm-hmm. they're waiting on subcontractors generally.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's a necessary industry. It's a critical industry. It's an industry that right now we certainly need more funding provided yep. for. You know, every time you ride down the road and hit 20 potholes, you can recognize how important the road industry is.
Yep.
So great industry to be a part of. It's provided me a really good life and I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for the men and women on the front lines who actually do the work.
Right.
It's not easy work and I recognize it's not work I could do. Yep. There's a reason I'm in HR and not on road crew.
Yeah.
So it's early mornings, it's late nights, it's dangerous work, and it's necessary. We all should recognize it a lot more than we do. But yeah, I've met some interesting characters through my career. I have lots of funny stories. I have some pretty tragic ones. You know, I was trying to think of some of the funnier ones. And generally, they come out of an investigation.
Oh, yeah. That's all the good ones come
somebody's
from
somebody's done something crazy. Yeah. So whether it was the truck driver peddling triple X movies out of his dump truck, yep. selling them to other employees.
Yep.
Or let's see. I had to do an investigation on my birthday one year, yep. and this was early on in my, this is when my naivete came forward that right. I didn't know I had, but I had to do an investigation one year on one of our tugboats.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had the deckhands would clean the captain's quarters, and he knew that they were going to come in there every day and clean. And it got to where when this one deckhand would go and clean, every time he'd go in there, the boat pilot would be nude. I still don't know to this day exactly yeah. what the psychology was
behind right.
all that. So I had to go. I told everyone I got an all expense paid cruise by on my birthday.
Right.
So I had to go out to the boat and do that investigation. So that was quite interesting one. I won't elaborate too much
right.
on that.
I appreciate that. Like, yeah. get me into it. We don't have to
then
get
let
the details.
It go. Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the weirder ones I had. But, yeah, I wasn't directly involved. Well, we won't go into that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, just some great people. Interesting characters. I had a guy one time who called me about his dental insurance coverage. And when I called him back a day or two later with the information, he said, don't worry, I already pulled it myself. He pulled his own tooth.
Yeah.
I mean, who does that?
Yep.
So, you know, just some interesting characters, but some great people along the way. As you know, Justin, we unfortunately suffered a couple of fatalities yep. at our division in Memphis. And I got really close to a couple of families there because not only the two on the job or three on the job fatalities that we had, but we also had some other tragedies. You know, we had yep. a suicide and a drowning, an employee who drowned on their off time. And those were all very tragic. And I felt like this is something I don't think HR does well enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in those kinds of situations, it is so important for us to show up.
Yeah.
You know, it meant so much to that widow that I was with her every step of the way planning the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she didn't even want her family members with her. She only wanted me with her.
Yeah.
And, you know, not that I'm anything spectacular, but I think it's just so important from a company standpoint and from a human standpoint
yep.
to show that you care in those tragic times. And so, as sad as it is to say, I think some of my most important HR work over the years was in those moments.
Yeah. It's that time where you finally get an opportunity. You've been telling people we care about you or
right.
you're, you know, we're like a family or whatever it is that people say, like, this is the point where you live it.
Yeah.
And I agree. Some of the times where I feel like I have been the most helpful or impactful or whatever that is has been in situations where somebody else that works for us is having one of the worst days of their life, right, whatever it is. Right. And you're there having to be calm and the voice of reason. Let's figure it out. Let's get you the help you need. And let's get you back, you know, if we can, whatever that is, situation is, but let's get you back to 100%. Let's get this situation solved as best we can.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, when I go back and think about when I feel like I have been good at my job or something like that, it's always those type situations. It wasn't a training that I did somewhere. All of those blur into one, you know?
Yeah. And so, we've all got those crazy, funny stories that you kind of roll your out, the XXX movies, all the dump truck stuff like that. But when you get a thank you note from an employee or an employee's family for whatever the reason may be, that's when it really matters to me. I mean, it's just, and I think, you know, I didn't come through college with an HR degree.
Yep.
I came through college with a business leadership degree. And I think we've lost a lot of that personal type touch. Nobody wants to be seen as the event planner, least of all me, even though I plan my share of events. But, you know, if you're going to say your people are your number one asset, then put your money where your mouth is. And I don't think we do that enough.
Yeah. You got to walk the walk. That's
absolutely
for sure.
Absolutely. You got to suit up and show up when it really counts.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And sometimes you can walk a little too far. So you made mention of the event we had at the zoo years ago.
Yeah.
And so I was probably in my second year of being in safety at that point. Feeling good, feeling cocky, like, you know, I know all these people, I know all their names, so you know what? I'm going to stand out front, and as they come in, I'm going to say hello to them and let them be known. Well, I knew who they were, but without a vest and hard hat on, I had no idea who these people were. They were all dressed nice, had their hair slicked back and all that, and it took about the 10th one, I went and moved towards the back.
Like, you did. I was walking, I'll never forget this one year at Christmas, I was walking through Oak Court Mall,
mm-hmm.
And I'm just walking, you know, through Oak Court Mall, Christmas shopping. And all of a sudden, this guy just steps right in front of me and just stops. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, me all indignant. How rude, you know. And I look up and it was one of our dump truck drivers. And it took a minute for me to, and he was just grinning from ear to ear.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a minute for me to recognize who he was. And then, of course, we both just died laughing. But I totally get it. You see people out, not like you normally see them day to day, and you don't even know who they are. So, And I'm not great. I hate to admit this, but in HR, I'm not great with names anyway. I have a really hard time remembering
names. I'm not either. The smartest thing I ever did is, and I forget who taught me or told me, but it's probably Max, but getting
the
label.
The wealth of knowledge, Max Watson.
Yes. Either infamous or famous, depending on how
depending
you know
it. Depending on how you look at it.
But I got a label maker, you know, and just a battery-operated label maker and go around. And the people that I knew, I would make their name and put it on their hard hat for them. Hey, put your name on there. And the ones that I didn't know, you know, you had to pretend you did. But you go have it like, hey, man, spell your name. I can't remember how you spell it. And then it's like John Smith
M-A-X.
And you feel stupid. Yeah. But at that point, you made a label and put it on there. And so it made it a lot easier when you go out on the job. Like, okay, that's John Smith. Hey, John, how's it going, man?
It's huge. And people will fight that all day long. But, you know, I used to say there's 400 of y'all. There's only one of me.
Exactly.
It's easy for you to remember my name. Yeah. It's not so easy for me to remember all
the
yours.
Thing is, you see them, you know them, you talk to them, but it's just the name. I've always been terrible with names.
Me too. So. And it's not a good field to be in to be bad with names.
No,
but
it's
not. I totally get that. When he stepped in front of me in the mall, I was ready to go off.
Yeah.
And all he did, and he was just grinning.
Yeah. So one of the other things that I enjoy about doing this, the reasons that I wanted to do it is because one thing I love about being on the road, and you are a lot for construction, is finding good places to eat. So do you have a favorite from your past, or do you have a current favorite of like road food? Not necessarily road food specifically, but the places you find when you're on the road.
You and I did one in Alabama, I believe. Was it
was it
Dreamland?
Was it
the original Dreamland barbecue?
Yeah, it was.
That was a pretty good one.
Yeah, we had to sit in the truck for like 10 minutes and wait on to open. We got there.
Was that our marathon trip?
Yep. That was when we, like less than 48 hours, we went to Nashville and
I hope
turned
you've learned they make airplanes.
I'm aware that they make them. I still don't use them.
I could have killed you that trip.
Yeah, but it was a good trip.
How many miles was that?
From
Texas
about
to
1500 round trip.
That was fun. Yeah, but that was a good food place. There also used to be over
By the way, that's Dreamland Barbecue in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you. Yes, delicious. Check it out.
Yep.
There also used to be, and it's not there anymore, the Catfish. Was it Catfish Cabin over in, wasn't it in West Memphis, Arkansas? What was the name of it? I think it was, it was a buffet and they had fried catfish and it was so good. And I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, what was that place?
I can't remember the name of it.
We used to always go to the, what was it, the Shake Shack over in Marion.
Yeah.
Hit burgers.
Yeah.
That was one we'd hit, it seemed like about once a week.
There was also in good old Beaumont, Texas. Yeah, don't forget that. There was Tasty Cream Kolaches.
Yep,
that's probably my favorite.
All right, so I'll give you that because that has been a topic of conversation. And it has moved locations. They've upgraded. Is that what it is now?
That's what it looks like, yeah. Yes. They have a nice, back when I used to frequent, it was a drive-up place, right. Like an old, what were those things when I was a kid, like the photo mart or mm-hmm. whatever those little huts were called.
Yep.
You didn't even walk in. You just drove up and it was in one of those. So very small, but it looks like they got fancy on it.
Yeah. They made enough money off kolaches. They put a permanent building in.
They have good donuts too, but yeah. I'm a kolache girl.
Yeah. The kolache was a thing that I had no idea what it was. And when I moved to Texas, the very first 6 a.m. Monday morning safety meeting with everybody in it, I showed up with all donuts and they were like, where are the kolaches? Yeah. So what the hell is a kolache?
I've never heard of it.
Yeah. And so at that point, my life changed. Like there are times in my life that have been pivotal where my world changed. And that was one of them when I discovered the kolache.
Best thing to come out of Beaumont, Texas was kolache.
Oh, gosh.
I don't think they originated there, although Jason's Deli did.
Yes, Jason's Deli did.
Kind of interesting, but yeah. The kolache is probably my favorite food story of road construction.
It really is. And there are kolaches and then there are good kolaches.
Yes, for sure.
And you can drive around. We even have a few places in where you can get kolaches and some of them are okay and some of them are not. It's a glorified, you know, pig in a blanket.
Yeah, it is. But it's so good. If they're good,
jalapeno
they're great.
Cheese.
Yeah. Yeah. It had good donuts, but definitely the kolaches.
Yeah. So if you're anywhere in Texas, for the most part, if you can find good kolaches, because it's like Walgreens. There's a donut store on every corner in Southeast Texas. Get you a good kolache. They are life-changing.
Also, I appreciated the breakfast tacos, the chip beef, I think.
Yeah. Ooh,
those things were awesome.
Yep. So, funny story. I don't know that it's funny or a story, but I'm going to tell you anyway. So, there's a right across the street from the subdivision I live in, there's basically been nothing there. If you want to go to a gas station, get breakfast or whatever, it's 5 minutes one way, 5 minutes the other. They are putting in a Circle K or 7-Eleven or something. But anyway, it's going to have one of those taco companies in it that makes the breakfast tacos. So I'm already setting aside money every month so I can get breakfast tacos every morning. Because I have a weakness for those too.
Yeah, you just got to remember that we're not 20 anymore.
I know.
And you know those numbers start mattering.
I know.
Bucks, but they do.
It's gonna be the cheat day special, I think.
Definitely some good food. My favorite. Okay, let me just tell you this. My favorite going to eat. I have two actually, but I'll tell this one.
Okay.
Max and I had been somewhere on a job somewhere. And we were in a hurry, as he usually was. It was probably him in the hurry.
He was not in a hurry to go everywhere. He still is.
He's a man in a hurry.
He is.
And we stopped at the Cracker Barrel over in West Memphis, and he told the server that we really needed to go because we needed our food quickly and we needed to pay and go quickly because I was pregnant.
Yep.
I've never been pregnant a day in my life. And he was trying to get me to the hospital. Like, who stops and eats at Cracker Barrel when they're about to deliver a baby?
He was quick on those. So I remember, and I don't mean to turn this into a story about, you know, a podcast stories of him, but.
Oh, he's the greatest. You should do Maxisms on your show. You should totally do Maxisms.
I had to, I was a late bloomer, I guess, and I had to get like three of my wisdom teeth removed when I was 30.
Yeah.
You know? And so, and I was single and everything else. I didn't have anybody to drive me there, drive me back or whatever. And they wouldn't, you know, they were going to put me under. So I had to have somebody. So I asked Max to do it.
Big mistake.
Showed up at 7 a.m., you know, first one in this place. And we go in to, you know, I got to go in, put my name down, register and all that at the front desk. And she's like, have you got somebody here to pick you up? And he just pipes up, yes, ma'am, that's me. My name is Max Watson. I'm his life partner. And so she looks at him, looks at me, and I just smiled at her. And she looks back at him. She's like, okay.
So yeah, off we went. You should change the name of this podcast.
No, I don't
it should be all about Max. Because, you know, and I can tell you a lot about Max because you know his roots were in HR.
That's what I've heard. Yes. No, I'm not going to get, he would want that, and I'm not going to give him the benefit of that. But no, you know, it's funny, but I mean, that was so much a part of what happens in this industry is mm-hmm. HR and safety have to be able to work together and work well together because so much of what happens overlaps.
Yes, it really does.
And so you had, you know, that relationship with him, had that relationship with me. Mm-hmm. And then
ask me which was easier.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put you on the spot. And then I had another place that I worked when I was in, and I was telling you earlier, you know, had a really good HR mm-hmm. person there, and we had a really good working relationship, and it made things so much easier to be able to have that good relationship and call each other, bounce things off, mm-hmm. whatever it is, help work through situations and have a little perspective from each side.
Yeah, it's so important, and it's really, it all just boils down to respect for everyone's trying to do. Yeah. I mean, we all have to be, we have to treat each other respectful, no doubt, but it's also about respect for the functions. You know, I don't like everything I have to do in HR. Believe me, there is a lot that personally I don't agree with,
right?
But that's my job. My job is to protect the organization and protect our workers. And that's what I'm going to do. I've always said I worked in a union environment for a couple of years after Rogue Construction. And then the day I met with the union leadership and the day I met with company leadership, my comments to them were, if I think you're right, I'm going to tell you and I'll support you. Yeah. If I think you're wrong, I'm going to tell you and I won't support you.
Right.
And that's kind of how I've always rolled. And, you know, it ruffles feathers and I'm okay with that. I think in HR, I had a project manager in Memphis tell me one time, yeah, Michelle, I find about half the employees like you and half the employees don't. I said, well, I must be doing my job.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, and good management has an understanding of that and understands you're a resource. Just like in safety, we're a resource. You know, we're there to give you information.
Exactly.
This is exactly what we see and how it is. You do with it what you want.
Yeah, then it's a business decision.
That's right.
If you want to absorb the risk, knock yourself out.
Yeah, there you go. So I know we are on a time constraint, so I feel like we have just started, so I'm probably going to have to do this again at some point.
I would love to. I hope it is wildly successful. You all listen to the podcast.
If you know at least three people and can tell them about this, that will be helpful.
No problem. Okay. At least. I think I might have three friends left that would care about road construction.
Awesome. So, and also women in construction, right?
Absolutely.
Getting that too. We're trying to cover all the bases here. So as we kind of wrap it up here, is there anything we didn't cover, or is there anything, advice-wise you would like to give to anybody who's maybe just getting into the business of road construction or HR or management, anything? I mean, like, you got any just words, pearls of wisdom you want to leave us with?
I don't know. I'd probably tell you more about what not to do than what to do. But
you know what? As you well know, the person that trained me in this, I learned more about what not to do than what to do.
We won't name him, though.
No, but he's very proud of that also. Yeah.
I think just, you know, like I said earlier, from an employment standpoint, recognize that this is a good industry to be in.
Yep.
I mean, that road construction is a stable industry. We're not ever going to not have roads, mm-hmm. right? If anything, we're going to have more and more of them, and hopefully they'll provide funding to fix the ones that we have, the infrastructure that we have. So I think, you know, from an employment standpoint, if maybe, you know, an office and a computer in front of your face for 10 or 12 hours a day in your bag, then, you know, it's definitely an industry to consider. Mm-hmm. It's hard work. It's not glamorous, but it provides very well. So I think from an employment standpoint, I think from a leadership standpoint, accept that the world's changing, accept that people are changing. Does that mean we have to give in to every little whim? No, but we're not, you know, the safety and the HR and the project manager people are not going to do all the work by themselves. So we have to find a way to develop people, help people understand how much they matter.
Mm-hmm.
I live by the motto, be firm but fair, or fair but firm, however you want to say it. That's kind of how I've been my whole career. People want to be treated like people, not like machines. So as leaders, show them you care. That doesn't equal babying people or whatever you want to call it nowadays, but but recognize that people want to feel like that they matter. They want to know they're appreciated. Some need that more than others, like it or not. But, you know, treat people with respect. The golden rule, I guess.
Yeah.
Treat others as you want to be treated.
Yeah. And this industry is one that is rewarding. I mean, it's
very, you feel like you can see your product.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. And you can, at the end of the day, you can see your product, you can see your progress, and you can drive across it with your friends and family and go, and tell them, we did this.
Yeah.
You know, I helped build this. And that's rewarding.
Another one of Max's maxims that I have quoted many times throughout my career, praise in public, correct in private.
Yep.
And what we allow, we teach. Oh, there's two of them.
That's
two
exactly
good ones.
Right. We're going to end up, I'm going to have to pay him royalties. I swear, I'm not even making money off this.
I swear. He's going to be so thrilled to know I mentioned him so much.
Yes, he is.
But those are true, you know. Treat people with respect, correct in private, praise in public. Give people the kudos when they deserve it. When you got to correct them, pull them aside and do it calmly and rationally. And what we allow, we teach. Don't be afraid to, as supervisors and managers, as leaders in an organization, you cannot be afraid to address, have the hard conversations.
Yep.
But don't do them when you're mad.
Yep. I don't use what we allow, we teach, because I would have to pay him royalties for that, but because he did trademark it.
It was on a sticker, I believe.
I'm sure. But the one that I do is very similar to that, which is whatever's, you know, as a supervisor, whatever's important to you is important to your people.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the same thing. If you take the job seriously or take safety seriously or whatever it is, they will see that and react accordingly. Yeah. If they see that you don't care, they don't care.
They don't care. Mm-hmm. So. And, you know, that's from everything from housekeeping to everything else. We've all seen those disastrous jobs.
And how you treat people.
Yeah, for sure. It's but yeah, it's been a great industry, and it's been a good time, interesting time, all some good, some not so good,
yep.
All the way.
But
it's
all
been
interesting.
A ride.
Yes.
It has been a ride.
Well, I really appreciate you doing this. I really do. And I will correct this. It is Michelle Coletta, not Michael Coletta.
Correct.
Because there are women in construction.
There absolutely are women.
But no, I definitely appreciate it. And,
I think on that end too, recognize that we're not skirts running around.
Yeah.
We are, you know, it's always about the right people in the right place, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, women bring stuff to road construction. Definitely. Not a lot of women are interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was always a challenge too, recruiting women to work in the industry. But I certainly wouldn't not try to do it.
Yeah. The ones that, over the companies that I've been in, the ones that I have seen who were interested in it and came to construction were just as good, if not better, than many others in construction.
Yeah.
There was no two tiers to it. They all worked great together.
Absolutely.
So, awesome.
It's the right people.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin.
If I didn't say it enough in the interview, thank you to Michelle Coletta for taking the time to sit and talk all things HR. For a lot of us in construction, HR stuff always sounds boring and has big words in it. Ain't nobody got time for that. But Michelle does a great job of boiling it down to some key points and explaining it in a way you can understand. She's been a friend and a wealth of information for a long time. This episode is premiering not long after Women in Construction Week. There are women in construction, and there's room for plenty more at every level. So if there are any women listening to this that aren't in construction, first of all, I don't know how you got here, but thank you. Second, if you've ever thought about it, don't be afraid to try construction. Okay, I only said fascinating once this time, so hopefully most of you are still here and sober. We talked a lot about food places in Texas this episode, so my road food place is the place I miss the most from my time there. Richard's Cafe in Beaumont, Texas is going to feel like home if you grew up on soul food in the South. Open kitchen with a group of ladies cooking up everything you can imagine, and they all call you baby when you come walking down the line. The food is killer. You will not be productive the rest of the day, I promise. Try the oxtails. All right, episode 2 in the books. Thanks to our guest, Michelle Coletta. Thanks to Tennessee Tucker for our music. Thanks to Amelia Hall for our cover art. If you enjoyed the episode, please tell someone about it. Leave us a review and a rating. Help us find a bigger audience. If you have comments or suggestions, send them to safetymancoming@gmail.com. There's no G on the end of Safety Man Coming. Also, find us on Facebook and Instagram at Safety Man Coming. Join us next episode as we introduce you to another person behind the cones on Safety Man Coming.